I'm Karen Garrison, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
And it's truly through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982, and that doesn't make me a miracle, it makes AA a miracle. If you're new here this morning, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I always call it God's Magnificent AA, the program that saved my life, and it's going to save yours too, if you're willing to take a few quick actions. And I suggest strong that you get a sponsor, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get busy, as everybody else is doing around here, and you're going to stay sober as I've stayed sober for 21 years, and people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. My home group is the Pacific Group in West LA, a group I'm very, very proud to be a member of, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And I guess if you're not proud, you ought to get a job and you might change your mind. I certainly have a job of mine, and I'm proud to have that job. I'd like to thank Doug and the committee for inviting me to come out. This is an honor and a privilege. It's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. You guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. And I think that it shows, and I make an awful lot of mistakes. I do an awful lot of things wrong. But I'll tell you one thing, that I love you. Make no mistake about that. I want to thank Lori for being such a delightful hostess. You know, 13 years ago, I was in Ames, Iowa, and to give a talk out here, and she was my hostess 13 years ago. So isn't this cool? 13 years later, different husband. Now she's pregnant. And by God, she's still sober. And we're both still sober. So that's the bottom line here, I'll tell you. But you've been wonderful all weekend. Thank you so much. You know, I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I ever opened my big mouth. And one thing is talk to my sponsor, and Clancy sends you his love and very best wishes this morning. And if anybody in this room is wondering why I have a man for a sponsor and why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I did not get sober in California. I got sober in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I come from a wonderful home there in Lincoln, Nebraska, and had every opportunity very, very well when I was growing up and did totally just the opposite, of course, like most of us do. But anyway, when I got sober, I was not doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous in Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud as I stand here this morning. And thank God for the old-timers in A, because somebody loved me enough to get my current sponsor. And I got to tell you that my life has done nothing but totally complete turns with all that. And I actually adore the ground that man walks on. I talked to him Friday before I left town, and he said, well, get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope, and tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They got it. They don't need your inspiration, my dear. And I talked directly to those new people, the life and blood of AA. And I believe that as I stand here and I welcome you and I hope that you stay. And then I think I did, without a doubt, the most important thing I can ever do, and that's to say, God, please help me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life today. You guys did not used to be that way with me, I can guarantee you. You know, like I said earlier, my sobriety date is May 30th, 1982. It was not always my sobriety date. When I got my current sponsor, I had to change that date, and there's a reason for that. I'm one of these people who had to get and smoke dope when I got sober. And, you know, if you're smoking marijuana in this room today, you are not sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I will tell you right this minute. And I don't want to argue about athletes. Ask any old-timer if you don't believe me. If I had to change my date, then by God, so do you. But anyway, I got my current sponsor. I tried to explain to him that where I'm from in Lincoln, you can have two sobriety dates, one from alcohol and one from drugs. Not every group in Lincoln believes that, but the one I went to did. And he said, you know what? The book says we don't do that, Karen. And I said, where in the big book does it mention pot? He said, if I find the word pot in that book, will you change your sobriety and never argue with me again? And I knew I was making a bad deal, you guys, by doing it. And I'll be damned if he didn't flip open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. On the first page of Bill Wilson's story, it says, died by musket or by pot. I said, that is not what that means. He said, quite frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn what it means. You said the book didn't mention pot. It does mention pot. Change your sobriety date or get a different sponsor, one or the other. So I changed my sobriety date. And I'm so glad I did that and stuff. But, you know, that still pisses me off. I had to change my sobriety date. February the 14th, I would have been 22 years sober, and I thought all day long, it could have been 22 years, you know. I am so sick, I can't begin to tell you guys. You know, I stand here this morning before you guys, and I have two broken toes, and you know, I know I'm getting better in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know why? Because the guy that dropped the 2-liter bottle of pop on my toes, I didn't have to slap the hell out of him. But anyway, I was at the grocery store in Venice, California, and as you can well imagine, we have a crazy place I live in and stuff, and you have to go to the grocery store to get postage stamps, so I need to do that. So you have to wait in line with 3,000 people to get postage stamps. They all got their groceries and stuff, and I have no tolerance for that whatsoever. But anyway, the guy ahead of me, this little old man, he was probably about 95 years old and stuff, and And he pulls out this 2-liter bottle of pop and dropped it right on my right big toe. And I thought, my God, I saw stars, you guys. It hurt so bad. And the funniest thing was, it flipped off that foot and rammed on the other one. So I got 2 broken toes on 2 different feet and stuff. But you know what? I was very gracious. I really was. And probably because I was in so much pain, I couldn't see straight. But, you know, he said, oh, God, I am so sorry. Did I hurt you? And I just couldn't even talk. And he said, oh, lady, please don't sue me. And I, out of my mouth came, don't even put the ID in my head. Anyway, he said, I went to the hospital in UCLA, could not believe it. I'd worked there for years, and I knew the people in the emergency room. And they said, how in the hell did this happen to you? What a bizarre accident. I thought, well, if it's bizarre and it happens to me. It never fails. But anyway, this old guy asked me, he said, can I have your phone number so I can check on you? And like a fool, I gave it to him. Every day he calls me. How are you, Karen? Are you okay today? And I said, you know, I'm fine. You don't have to call me anymore. And he says, oh, please let us take you out to dinner. I feel so bad I did that. And I said, forget about it. I'm fine. And the next morning, I get another phone call from him. So, but you know what? That's fine. You know, he's a great old guy and he didn't mean to do it. It was an accident and stuff. So I got to get over myself here. But anyway, you know, I am truly delighted to be here this morning. I love to be in the Midwest. I grew up in the Midwest. And I'll tell you what, someday I'm coming back to the Midwest. I live in a crazy place in Los Angeles, you guys. I got to tell you, and if it wasn't for AA there, I'd have been back years ago, if you want to know the truth. I'm tired of the traffic. I'm tired of the crime. I'm tired of a lot of stuff out there. And I'm getting to age now where it's all getting on my nerves big time, you know. But anyway, I know few people that can make it in Los Angeles more than 5 years, and I've been there for almost 18, so I'm proud of that at least. But one of these days, I'll come back to Nebraska and probably come to see you guys a lot, you know. But anyway, you know, I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska, and like I said, I come from a wonderful home there, and I want you to know that, and my mother wants you to know it too, I'll guarantee you that. You know, my mom died 12 years ago, and God, I miss her so much, you guys, I can't begin to tell you. And boy, you only get one, folks, and when they're gone, let me tell you. And I made amends to her many, many years ago. We had a wonderful relationship last few years of her life and stuff, but I just miss her so much. And I come from an alcoholic home, and I don't think that's neither here nor there. I don't do well with people that stand at AA podiums and blame anybody for anything. And my father died from this disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And you tell me how a major in the Air Force dies on Skid Row. I don't know how that happened, other than the fact that he was an alcoholic. And whether he found AA or not, I do not know. I just know that he certainly did not stay sober as a result of it. So one more time today, this is the cunning, baffling, powerful disease that kills people. This is not a game I'm playing up here. This is serious business. And I would give any the world if my father were alive today, because we would have a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who was Miss Ra-Ra in high school and homecoming queen and cheerleading and all that kind of crap and made straight A's and never cracked a book, and I made straight F's and never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. And she was a model for many, many years for Neiman Marcus in Dallas, and now she's retired and teaches school in the West Indies. And I got to tell you guys, as a direct result of this program, I love my sister very, very much today. And I found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside, too, and I never used to know that. I have a brother who was a fighter pilot in the Navy for many, many years. And my brother retired a couple years ago in August. And due to 9/11 and so forth, he's been called back in the service. And, you know, my brother is really old to be a fighter pilot. You guys, he's 51 years old. And we were growing up, I thought he was such a dork, I can't begin to tell you. Straight as an arrow, Mike, doesn't drink, doesn't use drugs, doesn't screw around. He was an embarrassment to me, if you want to know the truth. And today, I'm so proud of that man, I cannot begin to tell you. You wouldn't catch me over Iraq in any fighter plane, but neither one of these people are alcoholic. And I have another sister who's married the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of a whole bunch of trouble when I got sober, and I'm welcome in their homes today, and I never used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, if you know the truth. They're high successful people, and they bore me to tears. I love them, but they bore me to tears. And, you know, I have a couple of kids who are 43 and 44 years old, and I know I certainly don't look old enough to have kids at age, but by God, I sure do. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me. These kids are anything but boring, I got to tell you guys. As a matter of fact, they're a couple of jerks, if you want to know the truth. But you know what? Those couple of jerks have given me 5 of the most gorgeous grandbabies you've ever seen before in your life. And, you know, I had the most precious gift in my, I think probably in my whole sobriety happened about almost 2 years ago. My little grandson is down in Norman, Oklahoma, training for the Olympics, you guys. And he's 14, seemed to be 15 years old, and he's quite a gymnast, I understand. And they've invited him to go, so they're training him. And by God, he's going to Greece, it looks like, you guys. And his grandma will be in that stadium, I'll tell you what. But anyway, you know, when I got sober, you guys, my family wanted nothing to do with me. They had had it with me years before I quit drinking. Had to walk away from their own sanity, if you know the truth. And so, and making amends and things like that around here, it's all changed for me now. But it took a long time for it to happen. So on my 20th AA birthday, I got a phone call from Ryan about 10:30 at night, and it was his very first day down in Norman, Oklahoma. He's trained at Nadi Komenichi and Bart Conner's clinic down there. And he called me and he says, "Oh, grandmother, I'm so sorry to call you so late." And I said, "It is never too late to call your grandmother. Don't you ever think that." And he said, "Oh, grandma, I wanted to wish you a happy 20th AA birthday." And you guys, I just stood there and cried like a baby. And he said, "Oh, grandma, I didn't make you cry." And I said, "Ryan, you didn't make me cry. I'm crying because I'm so happy that you called me." And he said, "Oh, grandma, we're so proud of you." And I thought, "Oh, stop." You know, but anyway. And the same thing happened on AA birthday number 21. And by God, you know, I wouldn't trade that phone call for any amount of money I got in the bank. Well, that's not quite true, but you know what I'm talking about. So things with my family are very, very good today. It is only a direct result of this program, I can assure you, and it took a long time for it to happen, like I said. But, you know, the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color of squash, had an alcoholic hepatitis, I had a liver cirrhosis, I had ruptured esophageal varices. And if you don't know what that stuff is, you don't want to know it is, because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And if you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you it's not one of your finer wines, I can assure you. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crap has never seen a grape, make no mistake about that. And I literally could not believe what's gone on in my life. I'd lost my children. I'd lost my husband twice. I'd lost my house, my car. I destroyed every relationship I'd ever had with anybody, and I was clearly dying from alcoholism. And then I lost the one thing that brought my Neeson's disease. I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession. Absolutely devastated me, but did not stop me from drinking. And there's a reason for that, and it's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I have an obsession that somehow, someday, I'll learn to control and enjoy my drinking. The persistent illusion is astonishing, just like our book talks about, many of us pursue it in the gates of insanity and death. And I'll guarantee you one thing. I was in the gates of pure insanity. I got sober and almost into my coffin. And I am so grateful for this program as I stand here this morning. I cannot begin to tell you. And you're going to soon see why and stuff, but anyway, you know, I was a disruptive jerk when I was growing up, always in trouble, always kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I really hated people telling me what to do. And I like it even less today, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And I hear that a lot from AA podiums. And I'm right on with that, I got to tell you. And, you know, I really remember my first drink, you guys. But I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one. And I hope it was my last one. Remember what alcohol did for me from the very beginning? It made me feel like I belonged. I could be anything I wanted to be. I could do anything I wanted to do. I drank at any given opportunity after that, and I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous this morning, and I honor this podium by talking about alcoholism up here. I used a lot of drugs, too. Make that a small part of my story. My sponsor encourages me to do that. And, you know, when I was growing up in Nebraska, there just wasn't a lot of drugs on the street. But I'll guarantee you I found every single one of those drugs. And, you know, there's some marijuana and speed and stuff. And today, if you get caught for possession of marijuana, you get a ticket. Big deal. When I was growing up, you went to prison is what happened to you. And that didn't scare me. Absolutely nothing scared me. Everything I wasn't supposed to be doing. And I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here, that if you pat me on the head, my pants fall off is what happens to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name about them, and I loved about them. They've been the downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men, and there's a room full of them here this morning. I can just feel it, you know. Okay. One thing, girls, I love about where I live in Southern California, it's got so many sick men, I'm just entertained around the clock 24 hours a day. You know, you guys, I'm 59 years old, and I have a boyfriend. You better well believe I have a boyfriend. He lives in New York, and I live in L.A. That's why we get along so well. And, you know, we never see each other hardly, that's why. But, you know, this is a sick thing to say, but I was supposed to tell the truth up here. You know, I've been married twice, and I don't really ever want to get married again. That's fine. If it works for some people, it has never worked for me, trust me. But we have the most beautiful relationship I got to tell you guys about. We see each other twice, two or three times a month, maybe every other month, maybe five times a month, who knows. Go to the theater, go to the show, have dinner, get laid, and don't call me tomorrow. Sorry, but that works for me. Works for me. Do not tell my sponsor I said that, please. I have to tell you guys a funny story. I was in Nashville, Tennessee about 13 years ago, and one of the fine ladies of Nashville, Tennessee AA came up to me afterwards. And this woman said to me, she said, "You're disgusting." And she wasn't kidding you guys. She meant every word of it. And I said, "Lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I can assure you." And furthermore, if I wanted you to sponsor me, I'd phone to Nashville and ask you. You know, I hear some women give this podium, and I wonder if they ever drank, you guys. I really do. through all their drinking rooms and shoot you into the keyhole with an eyedropper. I was out there big time. I got myself into a lot of trouble. I've been taught to share that through the Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I offend anybody in this room today, I would never offend anybody in the program that saved my life. And besides that, my book tells me, and this is my favorite part of our book, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands your dark past will be the greatest possession that you have. And it goes on to say, because you can literally avert death and misery for others. And I found it to be very, very true in my sobriety. So if I offend anybody here today, I don't want to hear about it afterwards. But anyway, I got pregnant when I was 16 years old, and I had to get married. In my day, girls, you had to get married. There was no ifs, ands, and buts about that. It's just what we did and stuff. And as it must be, I married somebody that was 17 years old. I was 16. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I couldn't take care of a baby, nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew it, we had two babies to take care of. And I quick found out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And as it must be, I married an individual that was an alcoholic, you know, and we both drank and did all this kind of stuff, and totally immature people. We had no education, making minimum wage jobs, and we tried to make it. It's just that simple. And you know what? We did make it. We did make it. We didn't die, so we made it. But anyway, you know, and I grew to hate this guy very, very much. This guy used to come home and beat me up on a daily basis, and I had never seen a man hit a woman before in my life, you guys. I'll guarantee you one thing. If my dad would lay one hand on my mom, she'd have knocked him from here to the moon, I got to tell you. And like I said, I grew to hate him very, very much. But somebody in that family had to get a job, and I couldn't even find anything. You know, I had no education, and I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Lincoln, and the magic was put in my life. I literally fell in love with nursing. And I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school, and I'd love to become a registered nurse. That's what I would love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower. And I'm here to tell you from this podium this morning that that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. I don't have 1 ounce of willpower when it comes to my disease. But when I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And I went back. I finished junior high. I finished high school. I went to college full-time for 3 years, and I worked full-time for 3 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day, you guys, and that is hard stuff to do. I did not drink, not use any drugs during this period of time. At the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand here this morning and tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and they told me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, you are no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession, and I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people that I take care of, nor the people that I work with in ordinary circumstances. And what I have to tell you this morning is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never did marry these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism. I know nothing about social drinking. I drank, and with alcoholics, and we do indeed die from this. And at the age of 27 years old, I went to work in surgery at a hospital there in Lincoln, and I had that job for 19 years. I love working in the operating room. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position. I drank, remember, with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard and they played hard. And I need to tell you guys that the incidence of alcoholism amongst my profession is tremendously high. And that'll do a lot for your security if you're going to have surgery next week. It has to be very, very clean. And those people are so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says that we're to tell in a general way what our drinking was like. And you're going to get the general idea real quick what my drinking was like. I can tell you guys about my drinking about 5 seconds flat, you know the truth. Many, many years ago, I was at a concert in upstate New York called Woodstock. And I'm not talking about that piece of crap they had 9 years ago. I'm talking about the real Woodstock. And there will never be another one, trust me on that. The kids from the 60s threw a party that nobody will ever match, I am quite sure. And you know why there'll never be another one? That wasn't supposed to happen to begin with. But anyway, New York got when they're going to have this big event. And they told these people, if you don't get medical coverage, you are not going to have this concert. So they started hiring people from Lincoln. They thought it'd be more responsible. And we were a seedy lot, I can assure you. And, I was the first drunk to sign up this deal. And find 9 girls I worked with to join me. And met about 80 doctors from New York, and they were at Woodstock. I never seen so much alcohol in one place in my entire life. You could have floated a bathroom, no problem whatsoever. And the drugs, it was like a candy store. And everybody was sharing, we were sharing narcotics with everybody else. And we had this great big semi-truck on that back lot of Woodstock. That was our hospital park out there. And I don't recall being in that semi the entire week. But I do recall what it was like to stand from the stage at night that Richie Havens sang Freedom, and Joe Cocker and Country Joe sang some of those groups that I love. I come from the roaring 60s, you guys, and I love rock and roll, let me tell you. And things have not changed in my life one little tiny bit. loved Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin was my lady, let me tell you. Wouldn't Janis Joplin have been a fine member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys? I'd have hung out with Janis, let me tell you. I'd have traded Janis for Clancy any day of the week if you wanted to. Do not tell him I said that. I was just kidding. I wouldn't trade my sponsor for 20 Janis Joplins. But drinking for me at one time was a fun thing, you guys. It'd be a lot for me to stand this morning and say anything but that. But I cannot remember the fun after the pain that it caused me. And one more time, I am so grateful for this program. I cannot begin to tell you and stuff. But I'm going to give you a couple of good drinking stories and get my recovery here. You know, I love the horse races, too. I love everything I'm supposed to be doing. I've been to the horse races in Omaha, Nebraska with a couple of nurses that I worked with. And the girls told me, they said, Karen, the horse race has been over with for 3 hours. We're all drunk. Let's go back to Lincoln. And I said, well, run along. I met you guys from Council Bluffs, Iowa, and these guys want to take me to a party, and by God, I was going. Like I said, you pat me on the head, and I'll follow you anywhere you want to go. And I really can't tell you much about this party, you know, the guys that I was with. I just know that I woke up out of a blackout on Highway 2 by Palmyre, Nebraska, a little bit town of about 200 people, and I found out something very interesting about Palmyre, Nebraska that night, that they take a dim view of naked women walking on their highways, I can tell you that. And of all the luck, the first person I ran to was a highway patrolman. And you know, in Nebraska, the cops pretty much travel by themselves, where I live in California, they always have a partner, they're a little bit smarter than that. But anyway, this guy stops his squad car, and he rolls down his window, he turns on his siren, and he looked at me, and he said, what are you doing? And I thought, well, that's about the dumbest thing everybody say. It's quite obvious what I was doing. He said, lady, you get in this squad car and you sit down and don't you touch me. You know, one thing about a person like myself, every time I'm in trouble, I'll do one thing more to make it worse every single time. And I looked at this cop and I said, I'm not getting your squad car because you might try and rape me. He said, lady, I wouldn't bet any money on it. You are absolutely disgusting is what you are. And I'm here to tell you guys that that made me madder. You know, it was going on to show you how sick I was. And he had to get a matron out from Palmyre, Nebraska City Jail to come out there and get me. And that woman was not pleased, I will guarantee you. They were very busy at that downtown jail. And I have time for this foolishness. And I went downtown, booked in that cop's raincoat. You know, cops keep raincoats in the trunk of their car for these occasions. And I went downtown, booked for indecent exposure, for assault and battery, for kicking his windshield, for hitting her, for hitting him, all the delightful antics that we pull as practicing alcoholics. And I will never forget how humiliating it was to be in that courtroom. The very next morning, when my brother-in-law, and I stand there in my raincoat, when my brother-in-law, the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, came walking up to me, and I didn't know he was working there that day, he said, Karen, have you lost your marbles or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I looked at my brother-in-law, and I was to say this to many, many people in my drinking career in many, many courtrooms. I said, oh, for Christ's sakes, Dennis, this could happen to anybody, you know. And I, honest to God, believe that. I really did. And you know, that cost me about $3,000 to get out of that. And I just blew it off like it was no big deal. If you're going to drink, these things are going to happen occasionally. So what? And I kept right on drinking. I will never forget what it felt like to wake up in the very hospital that I worked at in surgery, in their emergency room, one more time coming out of a blackout, one more time I'd been to horse races. You know, for a number of years, I thought the horse races were my problem. It certainly was not my drinking. I'm one of these alcoholic females with a big mouth when I drink, and I have a big mouth in sobriety, but I can tell you that pain is a teacher here. It's getting a lot better. And I'd smart some guy at that horse race track, and he dealt me right in the teeth is what he did. And a plastic surgeon was putting 18 stitches in my mouth. And I'll never forget this doctor said to me, you guys, as long as I live, I'll never forget this. He said, Karen, what is wrong with you? We love you so much. You are such a good nurse. You know, we think you're an alcoholic. Let's send you to a treatment center and get this drinking problem taken care of so you can get on with your life here. And you guys, I could not believe the audacity that man had that he would say that to me. And I said, just fix my lip and get out of my face. I'll drink if I want to drink. And that's exactly what I did. And the drunk driving charges, the bad checks, all the stuff that we eventually do. My kids were in trouble. I never could marry these guys I was engaged to. They kept dying from alcoholism. And I thought, you know, I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father. Besides, I need to get even with him for all the things he's done to me. And those are not very good reasons to get married again. I got to tell you, I'm certainly not proud as I stand here this morning. You know, if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is like taking a bite out of the same turd twice. I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel. This is supposed to be a spiritual meeting, folks. But anyway, I danced that man through three of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth. And I love to tell you guys this story, but I tell you, and my sponsor always tells me that is not funny, and you should not be telling that from AA podiums. I said, okay, fine, then I won't count anymore. And he said, no, go ahead and count those people, see how sick you really were, and apparently how sick you really still are. And I'm still sick, and I still think it's funny, and I'm telling the story. When I married him again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I will kill you next time you hit me. And he said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied is what he did. And he came home drunk one night, and I happened to be sober this night for some reason, and I'll never know why, because I usually wasn't. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk? They want to take you to bed and stuff, and I was not buying it. If there's anything I can't stand, it's some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. And I will say, though, that when the shoe's under your foot, though, it's fine with me. And that guy came home and indicated that to me, and I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I want nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm going to tell you guys that I was pissed. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, if you want to know the truth. I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch, and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. And he said it for hours, you guys, the eye is pried open. And as it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis, and this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I can assure you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you the story unless I can tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse. But I thought to myself, what can I do to get even with this guy for all the things he's done to me? And I came up with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. That's one thing we should never do, folks, is drink and think at the same time. This was many, many years ago, you guys, when super glue first came out. And super glue was powerful stuff. You know, Mrs. Bobbin has nothing on me, I can assure you. I was a forerunner before she ever got started. I got that super glue, and I read the directions on that super glue. And like I said, I was drunk, and I wasn't seeing very clearly. And what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 5 minutes, is what it said. And I wonder, this guy, I get so excited when I tell this story, I could just do it all over again. And I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not one place, man, I have super glue, and I laughed about it, and I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning to screams of horror, like you cannot even, you know, I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true, but I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can assure you. And we had a telephone by our bed there, in our bedroom there in Lincoln. He called the police and the cops right in front of our home with their sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows, and you know, and my kids were standing there telling me, Mom, you glued our dad, you know. I'll never forget. As funny as that is, it's not funny at all, but anyway, you know, my kids were mortified and stuff, but anyway, and the cops were laughing, which maybe the whole thing was funny, and they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And I stood there with the cops, and I said, what makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing there with glue on my hands for Christ's sake. And they said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you can't arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital that I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the whole staff saw what Karen did. And they took me to jail, I might add. And it turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off. And they had to get 2 surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And, you know, there's a paper written about that at Creighton. And anybody that wants to go to medical school, you can read about it if you want to. I'd always wanted a paper written about me, but not like this, I got to tell you. And I was sitting in that jail thinking to myself, I am getting out of this marriage. When this guy comes home from the hospital, he's going to glue something to mine shut. And he would have, too, I guess. I'm sorry, but he would have. For those of you who don't know this, that happened to a lady in Kentucky about 3 years ago. It was on the national news, and I was on the freeway in LA. I had a wreck when I heard. I thought, my God, better her than me, I got to tell you. But anyway, you know, we have an immense step in this program. And my sponsor made me get on an airplane and fly to Sacramento, California, and make amends to my ex-husband where he currently lives. And I tried to tell my sponsor, I'm not sorry that I did that. Therefore, I don't have to make the amends. He said, I don't care whether you're sorry or not. Get in that airplane, you're going to do what I'm asking you to do, and maybe one of these days you will be sorry. And I'm telling anybody this room tonight, when that guy sees me, he kind of backs up, let me tell you. But we're able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends to him. And I will tell you guys, I walked away from that man. I was free of what I had done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I will tell you that the first time in my sobriety, the promises in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous came true in my life. And you know what else I found out about that? Motives mean nothing here, folks. My motives sucked on that one, let me tell you. But I still got the promises, so go figure. It's not motives, it's action that counts around here. But I have to tell you guys a funny story. I went up to Lompoc Prison to give a talk about a year and a half ago. And Lompoc Prison, most of us know, is a federal men's penitentiary in Central Coast, California. And they have this monthly speakers meeting, so they invite people to come up and share and so forth. So I drove up there, and you have to go to the guard tower, and you push the button. They say, who are you and what is your business? And I told them, they said, well, Mrs. Garrison, do you have any weapons on you, any guns, knives, explosives? And I said, no. And they said, well, Mrs. Garrison, do you have any super glue on you? For the first time in my life, I was totally speechless, you know. And the guard tower laughing. You guys ought to see him. The prisoners put him up to it and stuff. And I said, well, no, as a matter of fact, I don't. They said, well, then you can come on in, you know. Then we went to the meeting room, and this is all a male penitentiary. Went to the meeting room, and the guys had a blackboard, and then they put a great big circle with a red slash and said, no super glue. It was so funny. I just loved it. You never know what's going to happen. Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, I divorced that man one more time, and I got involved with the most bizarre man I've ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Lincoln, Nebraska is in the mafia, for Christ's sakes. And I was lying to him, and he was lying to me. It was your typical alcoholic nightmare is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was taking Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. It was beginning to be no more fun, I got to tell you guys. You know, I'm a nurse, and I've studied alcoholism. And I knew all about it before I became one. It shows me one more time today what our book says is so true. Self-knowledge avails us nothing with this disease. It's action that counts. Nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous do we have a chapter called Into Thinking. We do have one that's called Into Action. And that's the only reason I'm standing here 21 years sober. And the day came to me, the hospital told me, we have had all the crap we're going to take off of you, Karen. We cannot read about you in the paper anymore. Glue and husbands, drunk driving charges, bad checks. Everything you do in Lincoln's in the paper, I'm sorry to say. And they knew my game, let me tell you. And they said, obviously you have a drinking problem and you need some help. And you're going to treatment or you're out of here. You guys, you know what? You don't tell people like me that stuff. And I said, you and what army's going to make me go to a treatment center? And I walked out of a job that I loved more than even the whole world, and I cannot say that enough today. And I drank and I drank and I died 1,000 times over. I went to work at a nursing home, and what I'm ready to share with you guys is something I am not proud to discuss from any AA podium. It took me years in my sobriety before I'd even mention this. I found myself stealing drugs from that nursing home, and it wasn't because I liked drugs. It has nothing to do with anything. I was physically addicted to alcohol. I had to have this stuff, and I couldn't drink at work, so I started stealing narcotics. I couldn't go more than 3 hours without drinking. I was physically addicted to alcohol. I had to have this. The fun was over. It was something I had to do. And when that happens, it's a whole different ballgame, let me tell you guys. And I hated myself so bad, I cannot begin to tell you for doing that. And I was stealing morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium. I get my damn hands on. And if you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly mistaken. And the day came for me, the people that ran that place came up to me, and they said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You are just weird is what you are. You know, you take good care of the patients, you're a good nurse and stuff, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, yeah, you'd be strange too if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange too. I threw my narcotic keys at him, and I walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that interview. I got that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining a certain level of alcohol in my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly. And I was in hot water up to my yin-yang, let me tell you. And the day came for me when I got caught red-handed stealing some morphine in the hospital. And this has got to be, without a doubt, the most humiliating day of my entire life. When they said, you give us your narcotic keys and you get out of this hospital, don't you ever walk back in here again. We're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing Nebraska. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. My other two jobs should have done too, as a matter of fact. And long story short here today, I lost my nursing license. And to make a long story shorter and shorter here today, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the streets. And I've traveled the Midwest, I've prostituted myself, and I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or do. And I'm still so sick in the head sometimes I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again, you know. And my sponsor assures me I'm still a very ill person to be thinking that kind of crap. And, you know, I've been in nut houses, I've been in detoxes, I've been in jails, I've been in institutions. I cannot think of a thing that happened in the streets as a practicing female alcoholic. Things happened to me I would not repeat from this podium this morning, but I'm sure that you have the general idea. And 2 years went by for me, and there I was back there in Lincoln standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. You know, you guys, I'll tell you something. You know, I have a lot of fun at this podium, and I think that we should have fun and laugh up here. But I'll tell you what, I am dead ass right on serious about my recovery. Please believe that. Please believe that. I do not take these things lightly and stuff. And, you know, I had the honor and privilege of going to Warren, Ohio a couple weeks ago to give an AA talk, and the committee took me over to Akron. I'd never been to Akron before, and I got to walk through the steps that Dr. Bob did and Bill did many, many years ago, and what a fabulous experience it was. I went to the Mayflower Hotel and actually got to put my little ear by the phone where Bill Wilson made that first phone call, and it was so much fun. I wanted to say, "Hi, Bob, it's Karen." You know, I'm just kidding. But anyway, then we went over to Dr. Bob's house and the archives house next door. We saw a video over there, and I just found myself with tears of gratitude going down my cheeks for Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to tell you. And then we went to the grave, and this is really funny, you guys. At this grave where Dr. Bob is buried, they have all these signs now. They say, "Alcoholics, follow the arrows. Dr. Bob's grave is back here." I thought, I can't believe they did this in a graveyard. Talking about breaking your anonymity, you know, but that's fine. They probably get so tired of us coming there, they probably want to scream. But I went to the grave, and there was thousands of medallions on his grave, you guys. Oh, I just could not believe all this stuff. And I know it sounds real hokey and stuff, but it was not hokey at all, trust me. And then we went to Sister Ignatia, where Sister Ignatia treated the alcoholics, and went to the King's School, where Dr. Bob's home group for many, many years, till the day he died, actually. And you know, what a great experience. It took us 8 hours to do all this stuff. And, you know, I just was exhausted when it was over because it was so emotional for me, you know. So I stand here this morning with a great deal of gratitude for Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to tell you guys. And that just reinforced it for me 1,000% and stuff. So there I was back there in Lincoln, standing on Skid Row, and, you know, I'll never forget that last day of my drinking as long as I live, although I really can't tell you that much about it, if you know the truth, and I hope to God it was the last day of my drinking. There was a Hilton Hotel adjacent to that Skid Row area, and I remember thinking 2 years ago, I used to stand on top of the Hilton Hotel and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I rather imagine those folks felt the same way when they arrived there. And like I said, I can't tell you much about it at all. I woke up in an intensive care ward of the very hospital I was born at, the very hospital that I worked at for 19 years. And I will tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. You know, I'm not a very big person. I only weighed 95 pounds when I got sober. And I was coming off a quart or whatever a day and 200 milligrams of Valium a day. That is a lot of booze. That's a lot of pills. And I had a lot of Dianthe, let me tell you. You know, they say that most alcohol withdrawal is over within 3 days, and perhaps it is for some people. It certainly was not for me. It was going to be a long, long time for us to start feeling better. And I laid in that intensive care ward. I had tubes come out of my belly that were draining fluid off my liver. I had IVs going, and I found myself in withdrawal that was so bad I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I laid in that intensive care ward, and I shook, and I died for 30 solid days. And I'd scream at those nurses and say, "You give me some Librium, you give me some Valium, you give me something. This is absolutely inhumane that anybody should have this kind of withdrawal." And they said, "Karen, listen to us. There's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any irregularities. You're not getting one damn drug from us, so quit asking for them." But then each of these people did for me, and I'll be forever grateful as long as I'm sober in this program. They got 10 members of Alcoholics Anonymous to come and sit with me. And these people never left me day or night for 30 solid days. It was your original 12-step call, let me tell you guys. And, you know, I just want to say something real quickly because I feel so strongly about this because it saved my life. Once in a while in AA, I hear people say, not very many people, and I don't hear it that often. When I want to hear it, I want to throttle them by the neck. They say things like, "We don't go unless the alcoholic calls us." Oh, really? We don't? Well, those 10 members of Alcoholics Anonymous did. You know, I think if it's good enough for our co-founders, by God, it's good enough for us. I think Bill called Bob, as the story goes. I don't think Bob called Bill. And I hope to God I never forget where I'm coming around here to make a statement like that. You know, the nurses reached out, the alcoholics responded, and I have to believe as a direct result of that, I'm standing here 21 years sober and stuff. So, you know, my responsibility statement does indeed say, when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, anyone anywhere, we want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. Yeah. I hope I didn't step on anybody's toes by making that comment, and I don't give a damn if I did, if you want to know the truth, because I feel strongly about that. When I'm asked to do something, I just do it. I don't question and stuff. But anyway, so I just love these people from Alcoholics Anonymous. There was nobody in my life. Nobody was speaking to me. And for the first time in a long time, people were talking to me again. And at 30 days of sobriety, I walked in that official treatment from that hospital. I'm a product of a treatment center. I have no opinion on one way or the other, but apparently I went to a fine one because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I went through treatment. A lot of people got kicked out of treatment for fraternizing. I didn't. Nobody wants to fraternize with an orange person, I can assure you. They used to bring the patients over to the hospital, and they'd say, "Look at her. See what's going to happen to you if you keep on drinking. And look at her." I thought, how dare you bring people in my room and say stuff like that? But you guys, you know what? In retrospect today, I'm really glad they did that. I get to think about that before I think of any drink. But I was on a quick study in that inpatient 30-day program due to my rotten behavior. I was in there for 7 long months. That's a long time to be an inpatient 30-day program. But I completed the inpatient program, and I went to an outpatient program, and I went to an evening care program. and I went to an aftercare program. And I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I rapidly went through 19 sponsors in that town. You know, I was going to meetings. My butt was in those chairs. I had commitments, but I had not was not doing one bit of action that's going to save my life, let me tell you. And, you know, all these sponsors were trying to tell me, you got to start working these steps, and I would just blow them off right and left. You know, many wonderful people tried to help me, you guys, many wonderful people, and I just blew them off. And on my AA birthday every year, I make 19 phone calls to Lincoln, Nebraska, and to my sponsor, coach, which makes a total of 20, to thank them what they tried to do for me and stuff, because I do appreciate that. But I didn't appreciate it then and stuff. But, you know, I would tell the new people, you don't need to read the book, and you don't need a sponsor. We can do what we want to do around here. This is an individual program. And needless to say, I was not real popular with the old-timers in Lincoln, Nebraska. You guys, the old-timers in AA are so precious to me as I stand here this morning. But 1982, I could have killed this one, what these people thought. And you can pull your crap out here just for so long, and these old-timers are going to start nailing you one right after the other. God love the mean old-timers and Alcoholics Anonymous. They at least saved my life, and boy, they are dying off right and left, I got to tell you guys. And they have taught me well, and I'll be eternally grateful. But this old guy with 29 years of sobriety grabbed me of an AA one day. He said, come outside, I want to talk to you. You stay away from the new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA they read the book and they need a sponsor? You're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. And he went on to tell me, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska next weekend. His name is Clancy. You're going to have this man speak and ask this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I know all about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. But, you know, I told this old-timer, I said, who the hell do you think you are that you're going to tell me he's going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go with us Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee you I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. And I paid that money back, too, by the way. I did. I did. And I will tell you guys from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that Clancy literally put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. My life is never the same since that talk. And there's a reason for that. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in my life. I wouldn't have asked that man to sponsor me in a million years. Trust me, I'm not asking. And I found myself walking across that convention floor, asking that man to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazier than I ever thought of being. But anyway, I thought to myself, what he said that to me for? He doesn't even know me. And I wasn't aware of the fact this old-timer had called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked me if they brought me if he would talk to me. He said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. And I sent him my little white dress on, my little white gloves on, acting like an angel. And he saw right through my crap, I got to tell you. And he said, Karen, I like to sponsor people on long-distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you, because if I don't do it for you, you'll probably go die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good, because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me today. I tell you not to call me every day. You're going to read that book. You're going to sponsor people. You're going to become an active, vital member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not going to argue with me, defend your actions to me. You're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about we stood at the turning point. This was the day my recovery really did begin in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said 2 words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. I don't tell people yes, sir. Trust me, I do not. And, you know, respect's got to start for me somewhere. And might as well start with my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. One more time, God worked in my life, doing for me what I cannot do for myself and stuff. And I thought, oh, great, now I said it, and I got to go do it and stuff. And anyway, but that time I really loved AA, you guys. I just didn't want people telling me what to do. But I made the agreement, and I said I would do it. So I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in AA in the right way. It wasn't long before Clancy was telling me, there's a group in Omaha, Nebraska. It's called the Foxhall Group. It's in Bellevue. I want you to get up there and get involved with these people because I sponsor Dick, and I want you involved with these people. And I said, I don't like them. And he said, I don't give a damn who you like. Get up there and get involved with them. He said, call up Peggy and Dick and ask them if you can come up and just go to the Foxhall Group with them so they can show you where it's at. Just make the phone call. And I made the phone call. You know, it makes no difference whether I like people, don't like them, whatever. My motives mean nothing here. What makes the difference is I made the phone call. And I called Dick and Peggy, and Dick answered the phone, and he can tell you this is a true story. And I said, this is Karen Garrison from Lincoln. My sponsor has made me call you. I don't even like you, but I'm supposed to come up to your group tonight. And he said, Karen, why don't you come up and have dinner with Peggy and I tonight? And I thought, My God, what a horrible thing to say to that man, you know? I felt so bad. My behavior was just atrocious when I got here. But anyway, I did drive up to Bellevue that night and had dinner with these guys, and then I saw their group, and I thought, bingo, this is for me. This is what I need to be doing. So, and Dick and Peggy and I have been dear, dear friends. If my sponsor dropped dead this moment, Peggy Martin would be my sponsor. So I've already asked her, and she said, oh, God, please don't make me do this. She's just kidding. She would love to have me. Anyway, I just love, dearly love Peggy and Dick. They've been so instrumental in my life and so forth. But anyway, it wasn't long before Clancy was telling me, I want you to get that nursing license back. I tried to tell this man, I cannot go with that kind of humiliation. He said, Karen, are you arguing with me? I said, no. He said, get the State Board of Nursing Nebraska. You tell those people you've been sober in AA for a year and a half. You'd like the opportunity to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that's without a doubt the most important thing I can say. What my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought it would work or not. And I went up and asked them for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I can assure you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, if you know the truth. And I had to keep my mouth shut in the process, too. And one of the happiest days of my life occurred, it'll be 18 years ago next month, when one more time I was jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing Nebraska, and what they told me brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous, when they said, welcome home, you're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And as a gift from AA, I've not deserved it. By God, I intend to take it. You know, I went to visit Southern California a few times. I fell in love with Southern California AA. And, you know, in all our respective areas, we think we're in the mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous in the whole world. I believe that for my respective area, too. But I will tell you something. There is nothing like Midwest AA, you guys. There is nothing like the hard work ethic here, like the stuff that we do. And I miss the Midwest very, very much. I really do. So one of these days, I'll be back here. But anyway, I told Clancy on the phone. I said, you know, I want to move to LA. Live on that crazy Venice Beach with all those crazy people. I want to go on the Pacific group. I want to work at UCLA in the operating room. I mean, two of their transplant teams, their heart and liver transplant teams. I want this and I want that. And every single of those things have come true for me. Those are all gifts from AA. I deserve none. By God, I'm taking all of it, let me tell you. And, you know, before I sit down here today, I want to tell you guys a story that I've been asked to tell here today because, and thank you so much for asking me because I love to relive this whole thing again. You know, for many, many years I was on the transplant teams at UCLA and I had back surgery and my surgeon told me, he says, you've got to get out of there, Karen. You cannot do that kind of nursing anymore. You're going to wind up in a wheelchair. So, and I really pissed me off because I love working in surgery and I thought, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And he said, retire. Get out of there and retire. You don't have to work. You're going to walk out with a full retirement package. Don't worry about it. Just get out of there. And I thought, you know, I cannot sit at home and think, you guys, that is not good for me. So I went to work for Zimmer Surgical Instrument Company, and I thought, you know, I'm not a corporate person. I didn't even want the damn job, if you wanted the truth. And one of the vendors that worked for him, and he was retiring in January, he said, Karen, call them up. They'll hire you in New York second. They love to get OR nurses and stuff. They don't have to teach them anything. So, and I thought, I'm not corporate. I don't want to do this. And he said, just make the damn phone call. What do we talk to do around here? Just make the damn phone call. So I did make that phone call, and the guy hired me on the telephone. He said, I'll pay you $46 an hour. You get 6% of what you sell, and I don't have to sell anything, really, because the contracts have been in place for 30 years, and I just service the contracts. That's all I do. Any nitwit could do this job if he wanted the truth. I just stand and act like I know what I'm doing, and they all nod at me. You know, if they want something, I sell it to them. If they don't, I can care less, you know. But anyway, I love that job, and I stand here. As much as I miss the operating room, I could care less to go back in there, I got to tell you. Medicine is not pretty in this country right now, folks. But anyway, many, many years ago, I love to tell this story because it's such a precious example of me how it's so important to do what's in front of you, do what God gives you to do. You know, I asked Clancy early on, I said, you know, what is God's will? He said, how the hell am I supposed to know? I'm not God. But he said, I have to believe that when I'm not lying, stealing, cheating, I do what's on my plate, what God gives me to do. That's God's will for me. I said, do what's on your plate. I really didn't know what he was even talking about. And he said, why don't you just start answering the phone just for starters for you? Answer the phone when it rings. And I thought, that's God's will? He said, just do it. Shut up. You know. But anyway, you know, when I got sober, I did not have a telephone. You guys, it took me a long time to get a telephone in Alcoholics Anonymous. By the time I got it was bill collectors, and I didn't want to talk to them, let me tell you. But you know what? As a direct result of answering that phone and dealing with those bill collectors, I am $86,000 out of debt in Alcoholics Anonymous. It only took 18 short years to do it. It's like paying for dead horses everywhere. But you know what? I stand here debt-free, you guys, 100% debt-free. And I love that feeling, let me tell you. My sponsor told me, I tried to tell him, everybody in Lincoln's filing bankruptcy. He said, I don't care. care what everybody in Lincoln, Nebraska is doing. I care about what you're doing. You're not filing bankruptcy. Pay the money back. He said, the reason we need to do that is because you're going to do it again and again and again until you're totally responsible for it. And I'll tell you what, the last thing in the world I wanted to hear this morning is getting debt again, I got to tell you guys. But I'm so glad I did it. In retrospect, I resented it when I was doing it, let me tell you. But anyway, so I started answering the telephone. And about 11 years ago, we had a terrible nursing crisis in Southern California. And we were working our butts off, let me tell you. And I was always the first one to complain about it, I'm sorry to say. You know, like we're too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I was a bitch is what I was. And I'd worked 72 hours this particular week. And I worked the night shift over there for many years. That's when we do all our transplants and stuff. And so I had this one particular night off I want to tell you about. I went to a meeting early in the evening. I went home and I went to bed early. I was just exhausted. And the phone rang about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, I'm not answering that damn phone. It's my boss wanting me to come to work or somebody wanting to whine to me about something, and I'm not answering the phone. And my head told me, pick up the damn phone. Somebody's in trouble. You guys have taught me well, I'm sorry to say. So I picked up the telephone, and sure enough, it was my boss. And she said, I've got 18 people sick over here tonight. We're going to do a liver transplant on a little girl that's about 3 years old. I have nobody to do it. Now get over here and help me. I said, I have worked 72 hours. I can't even think straight. I'm so tired. She said, I can't help it. You need to come and help me. And the phone went dead. And I thought, I was going to call Clancy, but I don't want to talk to him about nothing at 2 o'clock in the morning. I know that he told me nobody ever died from lack of sleep care. And I'd say, well, there's a first time for everything, Clancy. You know, anyway, I just went to work, and I'm so glad I did. The most precious thing happened to you guys. And I got over there, and I sent my orderly upstairs to bring a little patient down to surgery. And we had a jet coming from New York with a liver for this child. We had some time to kill and stuff. And so my orderly called me, and he says, come out front and get your patient. You're not going to believe all the people with this family. And I thought, well, that's nice. They had the support. I was so crappy, you guys. And I went out front, and sure enough, they had about 75, 80 people with this family. I thought, how highly unusual at 4 o'clock in the morning. How highly unusual any time, if you want to know the truth. And the next thing I noticed was the mom. She had the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life. And the dad was good looking and stuff. And I looked down at my little patient. And I got to tell you guys that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to love at a level I never, ever, ever dreamt possible myself. And I ever so gently fell in love with this little baby girl. And she was so sick, she couldn't lift her head off the pillow. She was so sick and dying from some strange liver thing and needed a transplant. And I remember thinking to myself, and you didn't want to be her, you selfish person. I hated myself at that moment. But I said, well, I told myself I'm going to be the best nurse I've ever been before in my life. And by God, I was too. But in her little arms, she had a little bear. And she had a blanket wrapped around that bear hanging on here for dear life. And I've been over and talked to her, and I said, oh, you brought your little baby bear down to surgery? And she said, yeah, her little baby bear was going to have a liver transplant. And I said, oh, you're both going to have one? And she said, no, no, just the bear, you know. But sent the family out the waiting room, and that mom was in absolute hysterics, I got to tell you guys. And this little girl looked at me, and she said, why is my mommy crying? Go tell my mommy not to cry. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, what I learned in this program, I was able to tell that little baby girl the truth. And I said, your mommy's crying because your mommy loves you so very, very much. And that seemed to settle her down a little bit and stuff. And, you know, we have an anesthesiologist at UCLA that loves to play with the kids, you guys. He's just a delight to work with. So when she got her IV started, the bear got an IV started. She thought that was real funny. And his bag was called Bear Juice, and she laughed. And when she went to sleep, the bear went to sleep. So it was really quite painless for us, you know, the truth. But I'm going to tell you guys that 16-hour transplant did not go well. Excuse me. We almost lost that baby a couple times due to blood loss. I have never seen a team of people pull together like we pulled together that night for that baby. And 16 hours later, she went up to her room with not much hope at all, I got to tell you guys. She'd lost a tremendous amount of blood. And I became obsessed with this child, and I had to see her again. And we have a rule at UCLA, you may not get involved with these transplant patients. And when their organs come from, we cannot tell them it's best not to see them after surgery. Now, I didn't tell anybody in this room today that I'm real good at breaking rules, aren't I? And I thought, I'm just going to go upstairs and see how she's doing. I'm not going to talk to anybody. And that's exactly what I did. And when she was 6 days post-op, I went to that baby's room, and I opened the door to that child's room, and I could not believe what was in front of my face. My God, the power of God. The power of God. Here was this little baby girl. It was the first time she was in surgery. She was jumping up and down in her crib. She had diapers hanging around her knees. She had that baby bear in one arm, and she put Band-Aids all over that bear. They had Band-Aids on his eyes, his ears, his nose, and I mean everywhere. And then she had a little baby bottle in her other hand. She was feeding her bear. And I stood in that hall, and I just cried like a baby. And it's not cool to see the nursing staff bawl, let me tell you. That whole room full of people in there, and something caught my eye out of the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book wasn't sitting on that kid's dresser. And it all made sense to me now. And I was in that room like a flash, and I said, the mom, I said, whose book is that? And she said, well, that's my book. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, so is my husband. Her sponsor was there. His sponsor was there. And those 75, 80 people had driven 500 miles to be with this family. They were not from the L.A. area. And they showed me one more time what this gig is all about. It's about love and service, and that's all that it's about. And I was impressed, let me tell you. And I asked the mom, I said, how long have you been sober? And she said, 5 years today. I thought, oh, my God, her baby up for the first time. What a fabulous birthday present and stuff. And I walked over to this child, and she stopped dead in her tracks. She said, go away, I'm not sick anymore. I had my scrub clothes on. It scared the hell out of her, way, didn't I? I said, I didn't come up here to hurt you. I came here to see how you're doing. And you guys, she gave me her little bear, and she said, you take him home and take care of him. He needs a nurse to take care of him. He's so sick. I know why she gave me the bear to get me the hell away from her, but, you know. And I told the mom, I said, you know what? That bear went through this baby's liver transplant. We had by her little head or host surgery, you guys, in a plastic bag. And she said, Karen, please take it. She wants you to have it. She's got 50 bears in this room. And she did indeed have 50 bears in that room. And I felt like a fool walking down the hall with that bear. But I got to tell you guys, that bear was my most prized possession in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for many, many years. They got to be too damned important to me. When it gets to be too important, we got to get rid of it, folks. And, you know, my little granddaughter, Brandy, told me, she says, Grandma, can I have that bear? And I said, it's Grandma's bear, Brandy. And she said, well, I want him. And I said, Grandma, I'll buy you 100 bears. That's my bear. And she said, but I want, she knows the whole story. And she said, but I want that bear. And I finally said, it's Grandma's bear, Brandy. I thought, oh, my God, I can't believe I said that to my granddaughter, you know. It got so bad, we had to talk to my sponsor about it. What's a person my age talking to a sponsor about a bear for? You know what he told me? Give her the damn bear and quit being so damn selfish. You know, he said, you've got the memory. You got to give it away to keep it. Give her the damn bear. I don't want to hear another word about it. Just do it. And so anyway, I gave Brandy my bear, and I got to tell you guys, that bear sits in Lincoln, Nebraska on her dresser. She's 22 years old. She's got her own family now and Band-Aids intact. That bear is in perfect condition, so I get to visit him a couple times a year when I go home. But anyway, you know, I thought I need to reciprocate here. I obviously was not prepared for a birthday party, and I remember something that was in my pocket that Clancy gave me when I was 5 years sober. I was like 9 years sober when this happened. It was a medallion for 5 years of sobriety. The reason it's in my pocket at night at work, there's narcotic keys next to that medallion. I don't tell anybody in this room tonight, when I opened that cupboard, my eyes light up like firecrackers, and I remember where the hell I came from here. But anyway, it was time to give that medallion away. I'd hung on it for 4 years too long. I'm a selfish woman, I'm sorry to say. I could not seem to find the woman that was special enough, in my opinion, to give my five-year medallion to. And I knew I'd found her, let me tell you. And I gave it to her, and she says, oh, Karen, I can't take that. My God, Clancy gave you that. And I said, no, I want you to have it. And I really, really meant that. You have to give it away to keep it, folks. You've got to give it away. And I had finally done that. And she said, you know, Clancy gave you that. I just don't want it. I said, just take it, please. The nurses got wind of all this. We got a cake for the mother. We celebrated her 5 years of sobriety. I got my sponsor on the telephone. I had never seen Clancy so excited before or since. In about 3 hours, we had about 40 cars in front of UCLA. And I cannot begin to tell you how proud I was to take those people to my home group in Alcoholics Anonymous at night, the Pacific group. There's been no more contact with them. It's got to be that way for many, many reasons. My little girl is doing very, very well. And the point I'm trying to make here is I could have missed the whole damn thing. How many times in my life have I missed stuff because I wouldn't take a simple action like picking up the damn phone? That makes me crazy if I think about it long enough. But, you know, people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them than where our 12th tradition says long form. So that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, I may forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And there's more reasons than that for me. You're the ones that walked me when nobody else would walk with me. You held my hand when nobody else would hold my hand. And you told me that you loved me. And I need you as desperately here today as I need you in 1982. You've taught me how to live. You've taught me how to love. You've taught me how to keep my pants up and all those things. And I don't do any of those things very well. But I'll tell you the one thing that I do with 200% absolute perfection, and that is this. That I love this program more than in the whole world, and it's truly a story from an alcoholic hell I cannot even describe. I have truly been given, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, I have truly been given the keys to the kingdom. And I'm going to say one more thing, and I'm going to shut my mouth here right on time. It has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row, Nebraska, to where I stand in Iowa today. And I think that but for the grace of God in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I would have missed it all. Thank you for having me, and thank you for my life. Yeah.